Slice Your Age, episode 43.
Welcome to Slice Your Age, the show where we help you live stronger, thinner, healthier, and happier. Now, here's your host and personal coach, Dr. David Matto.
Hey everybody, this is Dr. Dave and welcome back to Slice Your Age. I have a fantastic show for you today. I'm going to be bringing in a really great guest. Her name is Marla Rose. I'll be introducing her in just a couple seconds. Marla Rose is from veganstreet.com. And hold it, even if you're not a vegan and don't even have any intention of becoming a vegan, you still have to listen to what Marla has to say. This is incredible stuff. So I'm not going to take a lot of time before I bring her in. I just wanted to remind all of my listeners, whether you're brand new, first time, or whether you've been with me the whole time, easiest way to get in touch and stay in touch and listen to all the podcast episodes and subscribe through iTunes is to simply go to sliceyourage.com. From that one website that we've got, sliceyourage.com, you can pretty much do anything or get to anything from there. So instead of a lot of times on the shows, what I'll do, I'll go through every single way to get in touch with us. And I'm going to keep it real simple today. Just go to sliceyourage.com. You can do it all from there. The only exception is our Facebook page is totally separate. And that is on Facebook, it's Slice Your Age. So having said all that, are we ready? Are we ready to have one of the coolest guests I've ever had on the show? I mean, they're all great. Something about Marla, it's an honor to have here, and let's bring her in, and you'll find out exactly why. Hey, Marla, so it's great to have you on the show today. Thanks so much for taking time out of your day to being with us.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for asking me.
You're very welcome, and I've got to tell you, it's a real honor because I'm friends with you on Facebook. I see all the stuff you do. You've got Vegan Streak going, and we'll talk about that a little bit. But it seems like you're kind of like a vegan rock star. Is that the case?
Well, I don't like to brag, but no, kidding. I don't know if I consider myself a vegan rock star. It seems like every vegan I know is kind of a rock star. Not to be, you know, sounding like, you know, I've got false humility or something, but it seems like once you've kind of moved in this direction, it seems like everyone I know is a rock star. But I guess I like to consider myself a rock star then.
But I tell you, I actually love that answer, that everybody that goes in this direction is a rock star. I love it. I'm gonna use that too in the future because it's great. So you have been a vegan for close to 20 years now. Is that correct?
Yes. 2015 is our 20th anniversary. February 1st, 2015.
Okay.
We'll be 20.
Great. So a little less than a year, about a half a year or so, it'll be 20 years. So tell me, Marla, so when you started this, I mean, there were not all that many vegans out there. At least I don't think there were. What made you become a vegan close to 20 years ago?
Yeah, I know. It was a very, very, as you can imagine, it was a very different landscape than it is now. Well, when I first went vegan, first of all, I live in Chicago. So even 20 years ago, I was pretty pampered as a vegan compared to, you know, people living in small towns and that sort of thing, or, you know, hunting communities and that sort of thing. There were already some vegans here. But what motivated me was I had been a vegetarian since I was 15. I just tried out being a vegetarian, didn't really have deep convictions about animals other than I felt affection for them and I liked them and I loved certain ones like my dog and that sort of thing. But so I had been a vegetarian since I was 15. And in college, I started to get involved in activism, you know, feminism and other issues. And the vegetarianism stuck with me because it just seemed very consistent with my worldview. And then after college, you know, I got a degree in painting, so I couldn't really do anything with that. But after college, I found myself working in humane education at a large animal shelter in Chicago, and I just loved it. I just enjoyed the heck out of it. We would go into classrooms and talk to kids about taking care of animals, but specifically about dogs and cats. But part of my job at the shelter was there was this hotline where people would call and ask specific questions about different issues in the Humane Education Department that would get funneled to me. And sometimes the questions had to do with things that didn't have anything to do with dogs or cats. They had to do with the egg industry or the dairy industry, which is very odd, but it was the pre-internet times. So I guess somehow or another, it came up that people, you know, ended up calling us with questions about these industries. And so we had a small but pretty well-curated library at the shelter. So I would go and copy materials for people and send them to them. And so, like, if people called about the egg industry or the dairy industry, I would, as I was photocopying stuff for them, I'd be reading them. And as I was reading them, I was learning more and more and more and more about how my convictions about why I didn't agree with eating, you know, the flesh of animals also encompassed why I wouldn't agree with eating the eggs and dairy of the animals. So, yeah, so I know that's a long-winded answer. But so anyway, as I was advocating on behalf of the dogs and cats, I was realizing that in my heart, I really wanted to encompass, you know, advocating for all these animals and to not isolate it to simply dogs and cats. So once when I left anti-cruelty, that was my mission, was to find a way to work on behalf of all the animals. So, and then, you know, also at anti-cruelty, I met other people who were activists and, and I got involved with different activist organizations, and there were people who were involved who were already vegan. And so they kind of helped me connect the dots even more and pave the way even more for ultimately becoming vegan.
Great. And no looking back. You're just, I can tell from like everything you're doing and your activism and your the tone of your voice, even, it sounds like you're just loving your life, what you're doing, and being vegan.
Yeah. I guess I'm empathetic to people who have burnout, who get burnt out on things. But I feel like I've never reached that. I feel like every day is such a profound blessing that I get to be able to experience this, to get to be able to work on this, you know, really, really essential, you know, social justice issue that is just so deep and so wide ranging. I feel like I could never run out of enthusiasm for it, you know. That, I think, is part of, unfortunately, what scares people when there are new vegans, is that we're so enthusiastic. Right. So I've learned to kind of temper that tone a little bit. But yeah, I am, you know, it is, I don't think I could ever run out of, you know, passion for it. You know, it's just, they need us so desperately. And it is such an empowering thing to get involved with that I'm grateful every day of my life that it came into my life.
Now, it sounds to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, but before you became vegan, when you were just purely vegetarian, did you say at age 15? 15 or 16?
Yes, 15.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Was that, it sounds to me that that was also more of a an animal-loving thing as opposed to like truly a health decision. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's never really, the health thing has always been a really nice bonus. You know, at 15, not many people are really thinking about their health.
Yeah, kind of true.
You know, what happened was I was going on a school trip, a high school trip to go skiing, and they had us fill out on the form if, it was weird because it was in the middle of the 1980s, and this kind of thing didn't typically happen then, but they had us fill out on the form if we needed a special meal, if we were vegetarian. And so I checked the box that said, and I wrote, I need a vegetarian meal. And what was odd is that it had never occurred in my head before. I'd never really thought too much about what I'd eaten, never really like was angst-ridden about it. But I thought, you know, I'm going to try to see if I can survive this one weekend without eating meat. And it's just so funny to think back about that now, because not only, you know, have I been a vegetarian and now a vegan all these years, but it's never been difficult, you know, for me. I mean, I know other people struggle for different reasons, but for me, it's always been really pretty easy.
Interesting. Now, you know, my show is Slice Your Age, and just right. about all of our listeners are listening because they want to feel younger, look younger, yes. lose weight, just be stronger. And I'm just guessing. I mean, I know my audience pretty well, and I'm guessing mm-hmm. that we probably don't have a whole lot of like true animal activists out there, quote unquote right. animal activists. I mean, you know, everybody, they say they love animals,
right?
But I don't think my audience is made up of activists. My audience is really made up of people that just want to be healthier and look better and feel
right.
better. But this whole thing kind of comes together because Marla, when I became vegan, actually, and it's kind of a similar story, but a much more compressed timeline, because I stopped eating meat. My wife and I stopped eating meat for a while. And then the short story is this. I've got a yoga instructor and a very good friend named Sandy, and she's a longtime vegan. And she would just always drop little hints and try to educate us and talk to us mm-hmm. about veganism. And over a period of time, we listened very, very carefully. And over a period of time, I remember this really vividly. We were in San Francisco visiting my son. It was just this past May. And I said to Yoko, my wife, I said, Yoko, that's it. I think we watched a few videos about animal
right.
abuse. And I said, that's it. We're going from vegetarian to vegan. I'm not going to be eating. I'm not going to be consuming or using any animal products whatsoever. But I think, you know, the general public out there, and even the people listening to my show, the people that are really into health and mm-hmm. fitness and weight loss and things like that, it's not simple convincing, because it seems right. to me, and you've been doing this a lot longer than I have, but it seems to me that most people kind of turn their head when it comes to the animals. Like, you know, if right. if it's about losing weight or being healthier or not ingesting toxins from fish
right.
or lowering cholesterol and blood pressure by not eating red meat or meat of any kind, that, you know, people want to hear about that. But it seems mm-hmm. to me not as many people really want to hear about the animal part of mm-hmm. this, the animal abuse part. So, mm-hmm. and sometimes I actually have problems because I don't want to come across too strong on my show, because when I started the show 9 months ago, I was eating meat.
Right. Wow. Just nine months ago.
Yeah. And like, wow. Look, I've been living a really healthy lifestyle as far as exercise and diet, but I was a meat eater. I mean, mm-hmm. what my mm-hmm. wife and I tried to do, we tried to do the right thing. We would try to go to the local farms where
right.
they say all the animals are very happy and mm-hmm. they treat them well and they're grass fed, you know, all that whole thing. We try to do everything right. But then after all the reading and talking and researching, et cetera, that's when we decided, you know, enough is enough. It's not, that's mm-hmm. not, that's not good enough. Mm-hmm. But now where was I going? I was kind of going but I get so sidetracked so easily, but it's easy when you're talking about this subject because it's so passionate. You know, we could just probably talk all day about it,
right.
But I think the point is, many people just don't really want to hear about the animal part, and again I don't want to come across too strongly on my mm-hmm. show about that, because like I said, when I first started, I was eating animals, so it's kind of, I got to be very careful. There's like a fine balance,
right?
But
right.
How do you handle that in your life when you're out in public or you're giving a talk somewhere? You're you know, just maybe talking to people. How do you balance it between the animal part and the health part?
Yeah, I think that is kind of a question a lot of times people have. Like, it seems like people who I tend to be in conversations with are more, you know, kind of coming at it from the ethical perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think it's important to meet people where they're at rather than talk at them, you know, and tell people why we think they should be interested and persuaded. So I think that, you know, we've always got to use our common sense when we talk to people. Like, you know, if someone could keep yammering and yammering and yammering away at me about something I don't really care about. Let me think about plants. I'm sorry. I'm looking at a plant, so I just said plants. About drapery. Okay, so
that's
like,
a good one. Drapery. You know? Yeah.
Okay, and I don't really care about drapery, but if somebody can make it compelling and make it so that I understand why I should care about drapery, the onus is on that person to talk to me in a way that's compelling, you know? So, you know, while I wish really, you know, deep in my heart that people cared about the animals just out of the goodness of their hearts and because they know it's the right thing to do, I do know that many people have a wall up to hearing that, that message at the beginning. And I do know many people who came in to veganism through the door of health and are now the most outspoken and the most passionately the most passionate advocates for the animals. So I am not one for kicking anyone out of the club, quote unquote, because they don't fit my standards of what I think they should be motivated by. but so to answer your question more, though, if somebody is coming at talking to me and wants to talk about the health aspects of things, I can talk about that, you know. And I think it's important as vegans that we have some adaptive qualities, that we, you know, have done some research, but that also that we don't make outlandish claims about the health benefits or any kind of negative health claims about eating animals. I mean, that we stick to facts, because I think that a lot of times vegans are depicted as being hysterical or being irrational. And so I think it's really important that we source our information really well, and that we kind of keep our feet on the ground to a large degree, so that we can be trusted conveyors of this information. I guess to answer your question, I can talk about health benefits. My heart is, you know, like if somebody wants to talk to me about the Bible and eating animals, I will tell people right from the beginning, I am not a biblical scholar. I was not raised in that tradition, so I can talk basically about what I know, but that's not my background and that's not my passion and that's not my area of expertise. So I would probably say the same thing about health.
Well, I've got an idea then. Yeah. Granted, here's what we'll do, Marla. I'm going to give you an anecdotal story.
Okay.
Just what's happened to me over the past couple months since I stopped consuming any type of animal product. Okay. And again, I want to emphasize or re-emphasize, I should say, that I've really been living an extremely healthy lifestyle, diet, and exercise, and it's not like I was
like you came from like gluttony and
exactly. So it's not like that. It's not like I was 500 pounds overweight. Right. Now all of a sudden I'm a vegan. No, I've been living a really healthy lifestyle. I wrote a book
active
on it 7 years ago, and I've been helping and teaching people healthy lifestyle for a long time.
Right.
But since I took animal products out of my diet and out of my life as far as like using them, this is really strange, but I've seen people that I maybe hadn't seen for a couple months, 2 or 3 mm-hmm. months, when I encounter them now, and this has happened at least 3 times in the past week, Marla. And it's still anecdotal.
Wow.
Because there's not a scientific study, of course, but
yeah.
But several people in the last week or 2 weeks have actually looked at me that they hadn't seen me in a couple months, and they said, "Dave, something's different about you. You look really good. Your face looks thinner. Your skin looks great. There's
right.
something that looks different." And I explained to them, and it's not coincidental. I mean, it's happened, like I said, it's happened
right.
several times. So I'm here to say that I lost a little bit of weight. Not that I even needed to lose weight, but
right.
just a little bit of weight around my abs. Everybody's got a little extra right there.
Yeah.
But so I feel extremely great about the health benefits. I'm convinced there are some very serious health benefits. So let's then, since your expertise really is and your passion is truly in with the animal rights, et cetera, why don't you speak to that? Why don't you speak to my listeners and let them know why they should at least listen to you and consider not consuming animal products anymore?
Sure. Okay. I do want to just say really quick, though, like about the health things is that, I became a vegetarian when I was 15, like I said, and then a vegan when I was 26. I'm sorry, 27. So okay. I didn't see a ton of differences, you know, because I was fairly young when this all happened. But I do notice that, like, I'm at an age now where I can notice I can remember what my parents were like when they were what my current age is. And I know that I have a lot, you know, I'm not on any medications. I don't need anything like that. I don't feel any different than I did in my 20s. I really, really don't. I've got tons of energy. So, this is just anecdotal, but I talk to people through Vegan Street all the time who've lost several hundred pounds, who got a new lease on life, who quit all their medications, all that stuff. So there is some real, success behind, you know, it's just people who turned everything around through this. So there is legitimacy there. I mean, plants are where it's at when it comes to nutrition, you know. For the ethical, for the animals, I would just say, you know, these are feeling beings who, you know, did not commit any crimes. Not that we would, you know, advocate doing it to criminals, what we do to the animals. Even that would be too cruel. Who didn't commit any crime, who have every vested interest in their own welfare and in their children's welfare, who are not only killed, but most of whom suffer tremendously before they're killed, who are kept in horrible, horrible environments. Many of the females are forcibly impregnated. You know, males and females alike go through modifications of their body without anesthesia, without follow-up care, moving of the testicles, debeaking, that sort of thing. If they're raised on quote-unquote humane farms, which is a very, 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 very small percentage of the animals, they are still treated as commodities. They are still treated as whatever we want to do with them. The idea that we would do to animals what we do to them for a quickly forgotten hamburger or, you know, that omelet that we ate last week that we can't even hardly remember, if at all, it seems unjustifiable. And I'm one of those people who really does believe that within us, you know, within humanity, we are more good than evil, and I far more good. And I feel like it goes on because it's going on behind closed doors, because there is this level of inscrutability to it, this invisibility to it, that's why it happens, in addition to it being inculcated into us. I'm sorry. Habituated. So I would just say, because these are their lives that end up becoming these chicken nuggets and these ice cream cones, and there's so much suffering that went into it and so much violence that I really feel if people understood that on a visceral level, people would reject it. And so that's why we're doing Vegan Street. We want to pull the curtain back on what is going on behind closed doors and help people to connect with their innate compassion. So that's what I have to say.
Great answer. It was from your heart, and I totally get it. I want to talk about Vegan Street in a second, but
sure.
But while you were giving that answer, that wonderful answer, I'm thinking of something. It's a question. It's a strange question, but do you think that, I mean, you and I really care, and our vegan friends seem to really care about the animals, and we mm-hmm. know what's going on behind the scenes in those factory farms and at the slaughterhouses, et cetera, et cetera. We know that. But my question is, do most people care?
Right. Well, I think that there is a percentage, I don't know what it is, but there is a percentage of people who can look at the footage and not be affected by it. You know, and really have walls around their hearts, you know, to the extent that they really are that closed off, that they won't feel the empathy that most of us would feel for those in distress and those who are actively suffering. I think that, you know, in general, people do feel, you know, a sense of sadness on behalf of the animals when they're exposed to what's really happening. But it's so easy just to go back to the status quo. It's so indoctrinated, and it's so available, and it's so convenient, you know, and it's so inexpensive, and there's no blood on our hands. So it's very easy to default back to that and to not be bothered as much, because there's so much distancing between who, you know, our daily lives and the animals that we are consuming. So it's easy to turn off the switch, I think, unfortunately. I think that a lot of times people kind of have it semi turned on when they're exposed to what's going on behind the scenes. But it's very easy to default back to your old ways if you don't have a deepening concern for trying to do better, quite honestly.
I mean, you're in Chicago now, which, by the way, love the city, love it. My wife and I try to get there. And run the we run the marathon. We run the Chicago Marathon.
Oh, excellent! You know what? That this year it's the day after Chicago Vegan Mania, which my husband and I co-founded.
By the way, that's one of the things on the list. I want to talk to you about that. I want to talk about Vegan Street, Chicago Vegan Mania, because I'm impressed. And in fact, I want to try to get there. We're not running the Chicago Marathon this year, but I even asked my wife a few days ago if she wants to hop on a plane and go to Chicago Vegan Mania, because it looks awesome. It looks incredible. So I want to talk about that in a second. But so you're in Chicago, a city that I love absolutely. Love, and I'm just wondering if you would walk into like Morton's or Smith and Walensky or Rosebud or one of those restaurants where everybody's in there eating meat and
the tourist all,
the
places,
tourists,
yes.
The tourist places. That's right. The Chicagoans probably don't go there, right? But they're eating the steaks and they're slapping the butter and the sour cream on the mashed potatoes. And you just said, "Hey, everybody, hey, wait a second, just wait, hold it, don't eat anymore. I want to show you a video of the what's going on." I mean, would they listen? Would they stop eating? Would they?
Oh,
what do you think
Dave,
would happen?
Dave, you never talk about this stuff around food. Okay, if I were, I don't know, tragically having to go to one of those places, I would call ahead and, you know, try to figure out a meal. And a lot of those places can accommodate, apparently. I haven't been to that kind of place in a long time, but that's what I heard.
Oh, no, they accommodate. I'm talking about you stopping everybody else from eating. All those business people that are in there eating those steaks and the sour cream and the butter, say, "Hey, everybody, wait a minute, hold. I want to show you this video. I don't want you to eat that stuff anymore." They'll look at you like you're crazy.
Yeah, and I wouldn't. I wouldn't do that, not because I care that much about not upsetting people, but because I care about being effective. I think a lot of times activists sacrifice the long-term success of their, you know, getting their message across in favor of trying to do it right now, you know?
Right.
And so I wouldn't do that because I don't think that one's chances of success are very good. And you will be disliked as the messenger. And as opposed to, you know, that person hearing your message, they're going to turn, you know, the anger that they feel about being called out on it to you, against you, rather than examining their actions. And so you will be the easy, quote unquote, I needed a better word for this, but you will be the easy scapegoat. I, you know, if you feel safe and, you know, confident about it. But I do think that sometimes we just need to look at these situations as planting seeds, not as, you know, necessarily that you're going to see a transformation before your very eyes. Because sometimes that becomes more about the ego than about really saving the animals. So sometimes we often, I think almost always, need to kind of look at these as you planting the seed, you know, as much as you can. And who knows, you know, what can happen down the road. You may not be there. You probably won't be there to see any kind of epiphanies or transformations. But, you know, we've got to content ourselves sometimes with planting seeds.
Marla, tell me about Vegan Street, this thing that you started how long ago?
Well, it's kind of a strange story. You know, we started Vegan Street not long after I left the Anti-Cruelty Society, the animal shelter where I worked. We started Vegan Street because, like I said, I wanted to work on behalf of, you know, all the animals and, you know, other human animals and, you know, human animals and the environment and all those things. By broadening my circle of activism. So we started Vegan Street, I believe, in 99. I'm not good at dates. It may have been 98. But anyway, we started Vegan Street, and, it was a kind of information and, you know, content portal. And then we stopped doing, and we update it all the time, and we stopped doing Vegan Street maybe a year after my son was born in 2003. We revived, and then my husband and I were both off doing our different things. I was doing freelance journalism during this time. My husband is a graphic designer. So we tend to complement each other really well with, you know, in the communications realm. So what we wanted to do was about a year ago, last July, actually, we got Vegan Street back off the ground again. And we kind of, we revived it. You know, it had been dormant since 2003. And we revived it with this whole new, just, it's kind of got the same, you know, spirit, but it's, you know, with more wisdom and better skills and that sort of thing. So Vegan Street, we started this new Vegan Street 2.0 a year ago, and it's been wonderful. We do, we kind of consider ourselves here to inspire, encourage, and empower people toward, or either like maintaining a vegan lifestyle or toward a vegan lifestyle. On Vegan Street, so we do weekly recipes. We do daily memes. So each weekday, we create what we call, what is the word is meme, M-E-M-E, which are the images that you see on Facebook and social media with text often. They're educational, they're ways to kind of convey ideas to people or convey information to people quickly and powerfully and memorably. So we do weekly memes all about looking at veganism from different directions, either exposing animal agribusiness or exposing the benefits of veganism or exposing the circuses and rodeos and that sort of thing. So we do those 5 days a week. And then, like I said, I do a weekly recipe. I do a weekly essay. And then I also do a weekly either a review, a cookbook review, or product reviews, or or I do an interview, or I do these things called DIY home tips. So different things that we can do, like cleaning products and personal care products that we can make simply and thriftfully and naturally at home. So we do a weekly update of all of those things. And then we also sell vegan propaganda shirts. we sell.
Yeah, I was at your store. I'm probably gonna order one. There's something I can't remember. I'm there right now, and it's the vegan gym. I love that.
Oh yeah, thank you. Yeah, that's a new version of a shirt that we used to have with Vegan Street way back in the day, but it's a new version, because the original one I think had a rhinoceros on it, and we're just thinking that women won't be so into like wearing an image
right.
of, you know, like, but so yeah, so we have message gear. So like one shirt, it has all these, so where do vegans get their protein? And it lists like
I saw that.
A billion sources of vegan protein. And it's a huge conversation starter. We've had people tell us all the time that I can't walk a block without people stopping me and asking me about it, what, you know, and talking, starting conversations about this stuff. So we see it as a way that you can always be like a walking billboard, you know, if that's what you want, you know. So, and we try to do it in a stylish way, because Lord knows vegans certainly have our reputation of being like, you know, nothing against hippies, because I love hippies, but you know, just kind of like not very stylish individuals. So we try to make them stylish, and you know, we do them
right.
We do them on organic cotton, fair trade.
Great.
So yeah, women's cuts and unisex. So
so there's it's a wonderful site. There's a lot going on there. It's going to take a while to get through. There's just so much cool stuff. So I'm going to recommend that my listeners check it out. It's veganstreet.com. It's easy to get to. It's really cool. I take it your husband John does most of these graphics for the site.
Yes,
I guess it looks great. He does the memes.
Yeah, he does the memes. We kind of figure them out together. I would say it's like 40-60. Like, you know, like we not to get competitive or anything. No, we do kind of a meme storming every Sunday or so, and we kind of think
great.
The week ahead, and yeah. So,
so tell me about what is it about Vegan Mania in Chicago? Tell me what's going on there. It's coming up in October. I know that.
Yes, this is our sixth annual one. Yes, so it's October 11th this year. It's at a place called the Broadway Armory in Chicago, which is a large, very beautiful, old Park District building. But it's been remodeled and it's gorgeous. And so we started Chicago Vegan Mania, almost 6 years ago. And we started because, you know, Chicago has this amazing tradition of all these, you know, cultural festivals and street festivals all summer long, all, you know, in the fall and that sort of thing. But there wasn't a vegan festival. There's a vegetarian one, but it was just really bumming me out that like there's like a bacon fest. There's actually now two bacon fests.
Oh,
I mean,
that's crazy. I say that's crazy. That's a bacon, two bacon fests. Wow.
That's so depressing.
Oh, it is depressing.
And then there's like a, you know, slow meat thing. Humane meat thing. And, but there's also like cultural festivals and you know, like Lithuania festival and all that stuff.
Sure,
so
sure.
I was just thinking, you know, sheesh, I know in our community there are, we have a very diverse community. We have a very big community. We have a great community full of, you know, active go-getters, that we need to be putting this out there to the public, you know, because, you know, it was really, you know, part of our uphill battle with veganism is demystifying it. And unfortunately, there's a lot of people within the vegan movement who kind of put up barriers a lot, you know, and say, I mean, that's kind of a complicated thing we can get into later. But what we wanted to do with Vegan Street is make it easier for people, demystify it, make it more accessible, make it more understandable, make it, you know, show the public how interesting and how, you know, dynamic and how diverse veganism is. So we started Vegan Mania as a celebration of Chicago's vegan cultural, Chicago's vegan culture, commerce, cuisine, couture, and community. The five C's.
Yeah.
And so, but it's kind of expanded beyond Chicago now. So we have speakers. We have.
I see you're speaking. By the way, I saw on this. You're speaking at something. Is it maybe at a dinner the night before? Something like I saw you speaking somewhere.
I spoke at Vegetarian Summerfest. Is that what you mean? I was, and I also spoke at a vegetarian meetup not too long of the Chicago vegetarian. Meetup,
maybe that's what it was. You know, it might have been the meetup I saw. That's what it was.
Yeah. So we have. Amazing speakers. We have cooking demos all day long. We have panels and workshops all day long. We have what we call our culture cafe, where people can listen to live music all day long, get massages, and that sort of. That's our hippie room. No kidding. We're really, really excited. We love our culture cafe. That's where people who are kind of, you know, get nervous around crowds can hang out, you know.
Marlo, so let me ask you, would this be the type of thing that is this just kind of a Chicago thing, or do you get people to come in actually from out of town to visit?
People from all over. You come here from all over. It's amazing. It's so cool. And then on the floor, on the vendor floor, we have dozens and dozens and dozens of vendors. Everything displayed, everything sold is vegan. And so we really promote it to the public as a celebration. So even though the word vegan is right there in the name, you know, we kind of had, you know, while we were starting Vegan Mania, the planning of it the first year, we thought, you know, there were people who came to us and suggested that we take the name vegan off so that we wouldn't alienate people. And we kind of took a leap of faith, you know, because they made some persuasive arguments. But I really felt like, you know, everything I do has the word vegan in it.
Sure. Definitely.
But I really felt like Chicago was ready for it. And I'm really getting tired of, I won't use the word veggie. I don't like that word. And I wouldn't want to use the word veg because that's infantilizing to me. It's like, it's to me, it's dumbing down unnecessarily. So I just thought, we're going to put it all out there. We're going to let people understand from the get-go this is a vegan festival, but we're going to do it in our communications to the public are going to be friendly, they're going to be warm, they're going to be inviting, and calling it Vegan Mania kind of makes fun of us in a playful way, you know, so that people... I think that people, when they go to something with a different, with where it's kind of like a bait and switch, where it's actually a vegan festival, but the word isn't there, and people don't know that it is. I mean, that can work.
Exactly.
That can work in some communities, and it could work in Chicago. But I felt very, very strongly about, like, if we want people to stop being afraid of this word, we need to use it. We need to use it in positive and favorable context like this, you know. So anyway, the first year we pulled up to the event, my husband and I'll never forget it. There was a line snaked around the building. We had no idea what to expect.
Wow.
You know, I was really scared, but I also had a good feeling in my stomach that things were going to go well. I had a good feeling about it, but you never know until you actually have it. But every year since, we've had lines outside the building. It's a free festival. We're committed to keeping it free to drawing as many people from the public as possible. You know, if you charge even $20, people aren't going to want to take that risk a lot of times, you know, especially when it's nice out in Chicago. People are very, very, you know, hang on to those beautiful days. So since we have it while there's still nice weather, you know, we keep it free and we draw thousands of people. And I mean, we do ask for a small donation at the door, but it's not required. You know, people can come in regardless. So,
well, I'll tell you, congratulations for what you have done with not only Vegan Street, but Vegan Mania Chicago. I'm convinced I'm going to make it a point. Yoko and I are going to try to get there. We're going to say hello to you. I'm going to actually invite my listeners. If my listeners want to come, we'll do a little meetup or something. But it sounds like an incredible event.
That would be fantastic. We will have the world's largest vegan food court for the day.
Oh, that's heaven.
Not that I
heaven.
Know of any other vegan food courts, but it will be, it's like, I don't know, anywhere between 14 and 16, 17, all vegan, everything, all the food there will be vegan.
So, wow, Marla, this has been fantastic. As a matter of fact, this is really strange, but so before this episode, I put something up on Facebook, and it's kind of funny the way I phrased it, but it really worked. I said I'm going to have a real live vegan on my show, and I said, and we're taking questions for her, and we'll be able to answer all your questions. And I don't know whether it was the phrasing or, but people took to that, and I've got tons of great questions, really good questions. And let's do this. Since we're out of time for today's show, would you be able to come back again, and we'll do it again next week, come back, and we will start right off by answering all of, or as many as we can of my listeners' questions, and we'll help. We're here to help people, and we want to educate and let them know and answer their questions about veganism. So are you good with that?
I'd love to. I'd be honored to. Yeah.
So great. So thanks so much for today. We'll say goodbye to thank you. And we'll say goodbye, and then we'll come back next week and let's do it again.
Sounds great.
Thanks, Marla.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Slice Your Age. You are no longer alone on this journey.
Slice your age.